Yeah. It's really just the same thing over and over again. Although this week, my wife does have to go back to work.
Oh, interesting.
And there are, all these precautions. And I could go in if I wanted to, but I'll be one less person they screen and give a mask to and all of that. So.
Yeah. And there are no students. Yeah. Students are-
nope. Students are not back. Students are not going to be back for a while. But they decided to bring the staff back.
Okay. Well, that makes
sense. Mm-hmm.
All right. So, I forgot to ask you about this. Microsoft Build, I did not watch. I was kind of looking for stuff to come out of it. I could find. The only thing I could find is that they announced that Linux GUI app, graphical apps, will be supporting Windows 10 Linux. For those who don't sell, or Linux something available, it allows you to open C-M. I'm not quite. There you go.
Yeah, it's interesting to think about because I'm trying to think of any Linux-only GUI apps that I really, really want on Windows. And even though I use Linux a fair amount and I use graphical apps on Linux, there's nothing where I go, I need that app. So, but we'll see. It's nice to have.
That only runs under Linux, right? Because most of it is incredibly generous. Maybe you want to run XEyes, old iPad tracker. And the first thing I ran, and it does, it's a little odd. Your mouse has a shell. Next thing, speaking of graphic, I just learned KRI. Anyway, it's a free open source painting that's available. I like Dota.org. And the last thing, thank you, John, is I still haven't gotten notified from Google Play Music. And by that, I mean to YouTube Music. But although I still haven't gotten that, I did get notified a couple of days ago about moving my podcast. I did that this morning, sadly. So it tells you the number. At any rate, you don't get a lot of but it's there. When I emailed John.
Well, and I have such interesting things. I just sent you a picture of XEyes looking at you because I forgotten that I actually installed X11 on my MacBook years ago. So I can run XEyes even on macOS and have it look down at Todd and I in the Skype window. So, I've been in a little bit of a quarantine fitness kick, I guess, because what else do I really have to do? My classes ended a couple weeks ago. I don't teach again until June 1st. So I've got some time, and I've been trying to use the time for things I would like to do versus work, because after this semester and the craziness that we had with it, I just decided, I need something else in my life other than work-related and working from home type stuff. So I started going out on walks, kind of power walk things, things enough to get my heart rate up about a week and a half ago. And I've been watching my rings on my Apple Watch actually fill up, which is a new thing. I've always had trouble getting the fitness or the green ring, the exercise ring, to fill. So that's been sort of interesting. It also is very interesting. I found that when you go for a walk about within 10, 15 minutes of waking up, you forget by 5 or 6 o'clock that day that you even went for a walk, which is kind of weird, sort of, I guess, selective amnesia where my brain doesn't want to admit that I was out exercising. And I've also noticed, I mentioned this last week, using your Apple Watch paired to your AirPods, I've actually gotten that to be less buggy this week. That was something that originally occasionally was an issue. And I found that the real solution is simply get completely out of range of my home Wi-Fi network and my home and my iPhone. As long as I am not still sort of connected to my iPhone and sort of connected to my home Wi-Fi, the AirPods sync up perfectly with my watch. Podcasts from Overwatch, or not Overwatch. What is the our podcast? Yeah, Overcast. Overwatch is a game that I play. Overcast is a an actual podcast app. But yeah, those have been working better. But I guess since I have been talking about and thinking about these things more, Facebook has decided to mercilessly try to sell me two things, fitness tracking devices and diabetes management devices, which I don't know. I don't really like the latter because I don't have diabetes and I'm hoping never to have it. But the former seems interesting. And so I've actually bought a little bit somewhat pricey amounts of these fitness tracking things. I wanted to talk about them today and see what your thoughts were on them. First of all, I will say that every time you read a review of these, it's always very funny to me because every one of these, when you read a review of them, the reviewer has to basically walk this line where they try to tell you this is not a miracle cure. This is not going to make you lose 100 pounds in a day, et cetera, et cetera. And for some of them, I think they actually downplay the value because they're afraid of overselling the value. But we'll see. I'll find out for myself when I finally get all these in, because I do not have any of them yet. The first is something called the Aura Strap, A-U-R-A. Aura is a company that makes both the strap and they also have their own fitness band. But the strap is interesting because it actually is a strap for an Apple Watch. So you can add in a couple of things with another sensor that go on the strap of your Apple Watch. It is integrated into the strap, so you cannot take it off and put it on other straps, which I was kind of hoping you could, but no, it's its own strap and you can't move it around. But it adds bioimpedance or impedance state analysis, so fat slash muscle content and hydration. And this is something I'm kind of interested in because the scale that I bought, I guess about a month ago, does include this data with its measurements, and it does sync into Apple Health. All of these actually sync into Apple Health, which is a must for me. I don't want to have my health data in like 800 different apps. But I'm mostly interested in this one. It was, you know, not as pricey as the others. It was $99. It was mostly to see, A, if it matches up with the stuff my scale gives me, because I'm kind of skeptical about that. And also if it changes throughout the day, because I get the scale readings at the morning and night, and I'm kind of curious when they change. Will it notice if I just drink a bottle of water? Will it not? But it's an interesting idea, and it's actually something I've been thinking about for years as a perfect corollary to the Apple Watch, to have this external sort of another sensor to put in. I do not know if it will work if it's outside of range of my iPhone, which I guess I will find out if I go for walks or if it only works with the iPhone nearby. But yeah, the Aura Strap, somewhat interesting.
So does the Aura, what is its power?
A little CR2032 battery.
Oh, okay.
That's supposed to work for about 6 months off of one battery. It actually includes, I think, you go to their page, they actually show what comes in the box. It comes with a screwdriver. And I don't know if that screwdriver is just to replace the battery, or maybe it does allow you to take it off of its strap and put it on another strap. I'll actually go take a look at the at it as we talk.
Oh,
but yeah, I thought that it didn't require a rechargeable battery. It just has a little button cell.
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm looking at the photo. I went to the website, AURADevices.io, and it looks almost like you're wearing two Apple Watches because the sensor if you wear your watch on top of your wrist, is at the bottom of your wrist. It kind of almost mirror images with a bunch of little metal bumps, I guess, which to do the bioimpedance analysis.
Yeah, so I thought it was an interesting idea. I thought this was going to be something that we saw years ago where manufacturers were going to start doing, you know, Apple Watch additional things through the strap. And we had the original diagnostic port on the Apple Watch, which was under one of the strap connectors. And it was, oh, maybe you can connect up special straps. And none of that has come to fruition. But
until now,
it's an interesting idea. Yeah.
And if you subscribe to the Aura newsletter, you get a 10% discount. So that saves you $10.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds interesting.
And it also tells me this and the next product, how the word Aura really gets used a lot. And if you do a search for Aura on the App Store, you'll find 1,000 other things that are, you know, software that are calling themselves Aura. So good advice is always make sure what spelling you're using. And this is A-U-R-A.
What are the alternate spellings that you see?
Well, the next...
I'm trying to think how you spell it now.
The next device that I bought is the Aura, O-U-R-A, Ring, which is by far the most interesting one that I think in terms of a wearable. I've wondered about smart rings for a while. In fact, I used to have a safe search on eBay that was just Bluetooth, with a bunch of things excluded, you know, headphones excluded, this just to find weird Bluetooth devices that didn't fit the mold. And I always wondered if I'd find one that was a ring.
Yeah.
Well, this one is a ring. It is a ring that you can get in any size from 5 to 13 that measures sleep quality, heart rate variability, and respiratory rate. And I do not sleep with my watch on. We've talked about this a little bit because, you know, I use that time to charge the watch. And the Apple Watch doesn't have built-in sleep tracking, at least right now. There's rumors that in Series 6 it will have it. So I looked at this and I thought, well, it's a little pricey. It is $299. So it is not a cheap ring. But if it can give me sleep tracking data and more info, and I can use it sort of as a replacement for my wedding band, which is actually getting a little bit loose because I have been losing weight, which is a good thing. But I thought, well, that'll save me from having to get the actual wedding band resized. And we'll just, I'm just kind of curious to see how well or how not well it works. Again, it's going to give me some of the same data that my Apple Watch gives me in terms of heart rate variability. So it's another way for me to check, just like with the AURA Aura, I can check to see if my scale is giving me reliable information or valid information, I guess. The Aura Ring will also be useful for that. Now, you do have to charge it about once per week. It comes with its own charging cable and its own dock that goes with it. And I'll get my sizing kit this week. You basically buy the ring and the sizing kit, and they give you the sizing kit for free. They ship it to you in advance. You figure out what ring size for what finger you want to wear it on, and then you send it back to them the size, and they tell you what or they ship you out your ring the next day. So I'll be curious. And also, this one's also interesting in that they tell you specifically do not wear it during workouts. It is not designed to be used during a workout, which is fine because I'm not sleeping during my workout, and I will have my Apple Watch for heart rate variability and such for the workout. So that is the Aura, O-U-R-A, ring.
How do you size the ring? I mean, you know, before you buy it.
I'm assuming that the sizing kit is going to be the little plastic rings that you can get that you slip on your finger. And they actually tell you wear it for 24 hours to see if you like that size and if it's comfortable. And then tell us which size it is.
Okay.
You can actually just go rogue. If you know your ring size, you can just tell them, just ship me a size whatever. but I don't know if I'm quite willing to do that with a $300.
No kidding. And, of course, you know, all of us have our ring sizes memorized.
Well, you know, I always knew that my ring finger was a size 13 because that's usually the largest size you can easily get.
But no longer.
I am actually curious to see what the other fingers are because I don't know if you've ever bought anything off of Wish, the, you know, sort of marketplace of the skeptical quality items.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, yeah. Wish is interesting. You can buy a lot of junk on Wish. It takes usually 3 to 4 weeks to get it because it comes from China directly and, you know, over regular post. And it's very sort of aggressive in its sales and trying to sell things. But one of the things they do have are very, very low cost rings that are like Star Trek emblems and other sort of nerdy, geeky things. And so I thought, well, at the very least, I'll get this sizing kit from Aura Ring and I'll figure out what size some of my other fingers are. And maybe I'll get, you know, a Starfleet ring or something like that just to freak people out with or have for fun. But, yeah, so the little extra things you can go for with these things. All right, so that is the second of my strange purchases. The third strange purchase I actually purchased back in
February. Oh, you got this one. Okay.
Well, I will be getting it. It will arrive on Thursday.
Okay.
Yes, because when I purchased it in February, they said, well, it's shipping in May. And I thought, yeah, we'll see. I've done this before. It wasn't Kickstarter or Indiegogo, but they did graduate off of one of those platforms. So I thought, okay, we'll see if it's really out in May or not. And about 2 weeks ago, I saw a review of it. So I thought, okay, good, it's in the wild. And then I got my shipping notification last week.
Okay.
But this is a device called the Lumen, L-U-M-E-N.
That is weird looking.
And again, This is also a word that is used a bunch. Yeah. So Lumen, I know of at least a company named Lumen and an app named Lumen that's a dating app for seniors. So you really have to be very specific when you, I guess we're running out of Web 2.0 names.
Yeah.
But yeah, so the Lumen is by far the craziest one of these things. They claim that you can hack your metabolism by analyzing your carbon dioxide output to see if your body is running on carbs or protein. And then it gives you a nutritional guideline for that day to basically say, if you want to lose weight today, this is the sort of food you should eat because it's what your body is running off of today. And I, you know, I've noticed some weird things about my body as I guess about 2 years ago, I started counting calories. Actually, 2 years ago today, the Sunday before Memorial Day, I started counting calories again. I'd gotten up to around 417 pounds or so, and now I'm at 326 or so.
Wow.
So I've lost about 90 pounds in 2 years. And over those 2 years, I've learned a lot about what my body, the screwy things my body does when it comes to processing things. For example, I've learned that carbs most days are my best friends. I can eat, you know, pizza and bread and lose weight that day, whereas if I eat all the protein that people tell you you're supposed to eat to lose weight, that doesn't always work for me. But that's sort of getting me wondering, you know, maybe my body does run in weirder cycles than conventional wisdom.
You're the anti keto, anti-keto diet.
Yeah, I really am. And it freaks out a lot of people. It freaks me out. You know, there was a day a couple of months ago where I think all I ate was pizza. I bought a pizza for lunch and I ate, you know, three slices for lunch or something like that. And then I ate the rest of it for dinner. And I think at the end of the day, I was 0.2 pounds heavier than I was at the beginning of the day. And also the next day, I was a pound down or so from where I was. It was just the most bizarre claim to love carbs and can't eat them.
If you can get some empirical data on this and you can create the anti-keto diet and you can tell people you can eat pizza all day long, you, my friend, will make money.
Well, and again, that's what got me thinking, you know, when I saw this weird device, this Lumen, which basically looks like a breathalyzer, you blow into it and it analyzes your output. I thought, you know, there might be something behind that because what else would cause me as one person be able to churn through carbs sometimes, other times my body doesn't seem to go through them as well, but then not be, you know, everyone else can't go through that. So we'll see. The reviews so far of this thing have been mixed. People say, yeah, it does what it's supposed to do, but again, there's a heavy dose of it's not going to cause you to drop 100 pounds in a week or anything like that. But I don't really want to drop 100 pounds in a week. I'd like to drop maybe another 30 to 40 pounds over a year. That's kind of what my goal is. I try to lose a little bit less than a pound a week so I can keep it off. So if this helps me do that, I will be very happy with it. And again, just like the Oura Ring, it's a little pricey. It was $299. Yeah. I ordered it on February 17th, and it's supposed to be here on Thursday. Last I checked, it had cleared customs from Hong Kong. It was in Cincinnati and is making its way to Mississippi.
So you described it as looking like a breathalyzer. I was going to describe it as looking like a really thick kazoo. It's about three quarters. Its length is about 3/4 the height of an iPhone that it's pictured next to. So it's not too big. It does kind of look like, looking at photos of people using it, it does kind of look like they're vaping, except there's no, you know, fumes coming out of it. I am very curious. I'm 300 is a little pricey for me, but I am very, very curious to hear what you think of all this stuff once you get them in. I just wanted to mention before the podcast started, I was telling John, I was looking at his list. I said, oh, I'm very interested in this stuff. And I was telling John, I bought a Fitbit Inspire HR wristband to replace my beloved Fitbit One, which is, you know, a pocketable device that I used for years. It was my third Fitbit in my pocket. It was a original Fitbit, forget what it was called, and a Fitbit Ultra, and they both kind of died, and I got a Fitbit One. And my Fitbit One actually did die shortly after I replaced it, perhaps out of sadness, but it was still getting a little wonky at the end, so I bought, and there are no more pocketable ones that had the features I wanted, so I bought a Inspire HR, since it's reasonably priced, it's under $100. I think I got it for $80 or something at like Sam's Club. But I read about the new Fitbit Charge 4, which is their higher end smartwatch, which includes what is it called? SpO2. It includes blood oxygen level. You know, which has become the rage right now that with the whole COVID-19 thing, people want to know what their blood oxygen levels are. Especially if they're not feeling well. But anyway, I still haven't bought one. It's $150. And unlike John, I don't have enough disposable income to just buy stuff. But I'm thinking about it. You know, my Fitbit HR, just telling John, it's not very old. I think it's less than a year old. But it's battery. Man, the battery just loses its charge so fast. I'm charging it probably every other day. And I'm not, like, tapping the display much. In fact, I gather the data via Bluetooth to my phone. I don't know if that kills it. I check it a couple times a day, but I don't think it's excessive. But yeah, Fitbit Charge 4. I was kind of hoping they would have a Memorial Day weekend sale, but so far nothing. So I'm still thinking about it. Always good. I love these biometric type of doodads. I'm thinking now. Now John's got me thinking about it some more. In fact, I'm speaking to John. I'm looking at my iPhone to see what the price is. It hasn't changed. Okay. All right. And now, what you've been waiting for? John's R tip of the week.
Yeah. So my book. I just got notification this week that it is entered into production staging. So my publisher. I got an email from the. Mm-hmm. Company in India that is doing the typesetting and production, because you know we outsource everything these days. So they're working on it, and I'm supposed to see it. I think June 22nd or so is the window that they told me. I have 5 days to look over my author proofs.
Okay.
One of the things that I looked through the book today and thought was interesting to talk about is sort of cleaning up when other people have made your life a little harder.
Yeah.
So. I have had this situation before where people have submitted data to me in an Excel spreadsheet or in a Google form or something along those lines where you think, okay, this should be easy. They can't mess this up, right? You know, I told them, enter the data on this form, you know, use numbers only, blah, 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 you know, and then you just get data that's annoying. So yeah. Years ago, this actually happened with me with students with heart rate data. I told them to give me, I actually had them all, they actually all got a pulse oximeter. So they're probably all using that right now to check to see if they have coronavirus. But they were using it for the heart rate feature on it. And I said, okay, enter the beats per minute, just the number. Okay. Do not enter anything else. And I got, you know, 90% of the class putting in, you know, 82, 87, blah, blah, blah. But then I'd have 10% that would put in 100 space BPM or 100 space beats or 100 space B or the word 100 or something just really bizarre that was not at all what I wanted. And I then had to go through a spreadsheet and recode all of these things. And of course, every time I recoded it, there was a chance that maybe I would, you know, flub it up and, you know, recode 100 to 101 or whatever my finger landed on. So if you find yourself with these sorts of issues, there are some string manipulation tools in R. And these tools also exist in Excel. But if you already have your data in R, obviously you're going to want to know about them in R, that let you treat different items, especially if they're already treated as characters, which a lot of data, especially if someone puts in USD after a dollar or puts in a dollar sign, R is going to know to treat that as a string, not treat it as a number. But there are string manipulation tools that will let you, in very much the same way as you might in Excel, go in, search out what you want and just isolate that versus having to go in and recode all of this stuff. That's the last thing we want to be doing because recoding is prone to error, whereas if we script it, we know exactly what it's doing to the data. So I've got a few snippets of code. The first snippet of code actually works as you would expect. It's a collection of values, 1495, 2562, 3550. You run the second line, it will sum it up and give you the number of all three of those added together. Then we have sort of the annoying version where someone has put in space USD at the end of every single one of these. So they are US dollars. We need to strip off those last four characters, mm-hmm. the space, the U, the S, and the D. So the line of code below it, it's very similar to the second line on the first snippet. It's basically searching through the collection, starting at the first character, and then searching to four characters from the end and isolating those out, and then summing them up. And then in the last snippet of code, we've got someone who was very anxious to tell us that these were dollar amounts, and so they put a dollar sign in front of every single one of these. And now the code basically searches by starting at the second character, so ignoring that leading dollar sign, and taking all of the rest of the characters. Hmm. So starting at the second and then the rest of the character through. So all three of these snippets do the exact same thing, but the data is formatted differently. So the idea there is if you find that your data is formatted in a way that's not very useful, you can put in a line of code to just reformat it the way you want and get your data summed up or multiplied or transposed or whatever it is you might be doing.
You know, you touch on one of my pet peeves for generally Excel users. I mean, you're not touching on Excel users in specific, but let's face it, that's the way most data gets entered into the universe these days, or so it seems, by at least regular people. People use Excel like, I'm not even sure what that analogy is.
A piece of paper.
Maybe that's a good analogy, like a piece of paper. And they'll put manual headers in the middle of rows. You know, like header, rows of numbers and strings of text, and then all of a sudden header again. They'll put all kinds of weird things in there that makes it almost impossible to analyze the data. In other words, the data is practically useless from the point of view of just sucking it into something, you know, whether it's R or Power BI or Tableau or whatever you have. And just, you know, doing a quick and dirty, you know, summary analysis or a quick table or, you know, quick kind of test of some kind, statistical test. And you sit there for, you know, an hour cleaning up their filthy little table just so you have so you have numbers that can be easily, you know, analyzed by something else, including Excel. It could be, and it's mostly because they don't know you can run reports in Excel without putting in all the stuff beforehand. You can automate this, is what I'm saying. And I wish, you know, and Microsoft has become pretty good lately with their AI wizards for doing various kinds of things like formatting. What we really need is something that watches people enter data manually versus you import it and say, hey, wait, you're doing this wrong. Stop.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's not how data should look at all. So anyway, one of my pet peeves, because it slows me down more than anything.
Yeah, and I have found the same thing with, you know, as I mentioned, the people in my life and their dirty little tables, that they just don't quite get the whole idea of Excel or, yeah, you know, what you can do with it. To the point that I've shown people things in Excel that they go, well, I never knew you could do that. Well, that's why I do what I do, you know, faster than you, because you can do these sorts of things. And I think actually the best example I have of that is years ago, a friend of mine and I were talking, and she was complaining about how every time one of her employees sends her a report, it's always wrong.
Hmm.
And I said, well, what's the report? And she said, well, you know, there's all these categories, and she has to give me the number of entries in each category. I said, well, that's a pivot table. You know, that's not hard. And she goes, really? I said, yeah, that's like 2 minutes. And she goes, every time they manually just count.
Yeah.
And they always get it wrong. I open it up and I go, you said that there are, you know, five widgets and there's actually 10. And, you know, oh, well, we didn't catch this or that. And I've seen people do these weird machinations of counting or sorting and filtering. And it's like, just use a pivot table. Oh, exactly. That's too complex. I could never do that.
Exactly.
Well, okay, you're just going to have errors for the rest of your life, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that so often too. And I've like you, I've shown people how to use the very basics of pivot table. And for those who get it, it's changed their lives. You know, like this would take really me hours a week. Now I can do it in it really 2 minutes. Ah,
sorry. You know, and it's funny, you combine R and Excel. Yeah. So if you know how to do certain things very quickly in Excel, and it's not going to fundamentally alter your raw data, you can do a couple of things in Excel and then push it over to R and do even more magical things. So use the right tools and use a combination of tools and you get good results.
Right. And then there's my other pet peeve is people who misuse tools. Like, you know, they'll do a trend line. They'll take data from their Excel table. Their, you know, data is actually in a useful format that they can create a graph. And then they'll take a trend line and go, look, it's going up. And I go, look, R squared is like useless. You know, it's like 0.1. It's not telling you squat. You think it's going up. It's going nowhere, according to the R squared value. So, any rate, yeah, people need to learn to use tools. Otherwise, it's meaningless for either them or us. All right. Well, actually, I predicted this would be a short one. And it's not. It's 35 minutes. So once again, we've managed to fill up space with absolutely nothing. It's pretty darn amazing how we do this. We are good at it. We've been doing it a couple hundred times together now. So, you know, we're really improving at this, making something out of nothing. Kind of the Seinfeld of podcasts.
Very true.
All righty. Well, as the country starts to open up, I hope everybody, our fives of listeners out there, safe and sound. And doing what you need to do to remain so. And we will talk to you next time.